Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Last week, Wisconsin and I was in the Dells for the Republican State Convention, in Wausau for a conference on addiction, in Milwaukee at the Madison Rotary, and I interviewed an AARP official. Here's an official short summary. Wisconsin and I was there. We're going to open the show with that this week.
Because we have a lot of people that, well, they're not in poverty now or very close to poverty. And a lot of people are assuming that Social Security gives you enough money to retire on. And that's just not true.
So Austin was 15 when we learned that he was using. At the age of 18 was the first time he was incarcerated. Basically, before that, we were just trying to keep him alive because he would use anything and everything. And it started with cough syrup.
It's hard to go through these things and see a loved one talk or constantly changing, not knowing how to stop. It's something that can break a person, even though they're not the one that's actually doing it.
Folks who are smoking on the corner know that it's not a good thing, you know? And they're doing it, and they're doing it for a good reason. What we've now found with the science of neurodevelopment and disrupted neural development, drugs like nicotine are excellent for addressing anxiety and depression. So in a way, people have found a way to self-medicate. Now, it may have dire consequences, but when you're struggling in the moment, that is a good solution.
So though I had a little regret stepping away from this race, I was feeling more regret taking too much time away from my kids. So the timing wasn't right for me, though. I think the politics of this next election cycle are going to go well, and I think Tammy will have a tough time winning. But it's not going to be me that's going to be at the top of our ticket in that Senate race.
You know what? Here's what I'd be willing to do, because once again, I'm open-minded. I'd be willing to get on a plane with Senator Fitzgerald and with Governor Walker to go to Washington to say to Speaker Ryan, let's get this done, and as soon as we get the option to toll, we'll pass a transportation bill.
JR, we got a lot of news to talk about this week, but I was so intrigued with the 5+ hour Assembly Corrections Committee because it hit on two things. The two oldest prisons, Waupun and Green Bay, and then you had this fight over tougher on crime between San Filippo and Goyke, and San Filippo and Senator Vukmir want some tougher on crime. So I'm going to go in depth of those a little bit, but the first thing I want to do is I want to play a clip on both those issues. You have Committee Chairman Mike Schirra saying, why should we scrape Green Bay when my prison, Waupun, was built before the Civil War? And then you had this back and forth where Goyke says, I'm not scared of you, Mr. San Filippo, so let's listen to that before we get into the merits of it.
Senator Lissade mentioned that Green Bay Correctional was actually built before automobiles. I have a prison in my district, Waupun Correctional, that was actually built pre-Civil War. If you can elaborate a little bit more as to why this state should move forward with rebuilding Green Bay Correctional rather than the fourth oldest prison in the United States.
My members are very, very, very worried about the road that this bill is going down. They don't believe that this is going to end up being a public facility. They think this is the road to privatization of prisons, and not just Green Bay.
The Department of Corrections determines that an individual poses a great threat to society, but under the statute, they have to open the door and let that person out. Chances are they're going to go and kill you or your kids or your neighbor or somebody, but we got to let them out because that's what the statute says.
I'm not scared of you, and I'm not scared of the saber rattling. More likely that I'm going to get murdered or that we're lock them all up. This is outrageous. You're scaring people.
I don't have to scare anybody. All you gotta do is read the headlines. Oconomowoc woman killed in Milwaukee shooting. That's a lady I referred to who was going to work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
JR, I really got interested in this because you have Senator Frank Lucey and Representative Dave Steffen saying we need to tear down the Green Bay Prison, which was built, it's an old bike factory. Mm-hmm. It opened in 1899. And we need to have a private company come in, build a new one, and then the state would lease with a purchase option. But then you have this hybrid plan. It would be run by Department of Corrections guards and staffs. And then you have the village of, how do I say it? LOA? Am I close? Saying we're completely landlocked. We need this prison scraped so we can develop it. Potential economic development of $80 million. Only to have the committee chairman, Mr. Shiraz, saying, excuse me, the prison in my district, Waupun, was built pre-Civil War. In fact, South Hall opened in 1854. What are your thoughts on cell wars, what I'm calling cell wars?
Well, a couple of things. One, Steffen and those guys that backed the private prison in Green Bay have talked about, well, say the state, $153 million over 10 years.
Over 10 years, yes.
But let's look at the age of these prisons. So Waupun is how old again?
Waupun, 1854.
Cost over 20 years, 40 years, 50 years? Because these are not going to be 10-year projects. So that's issue number one. Number two, we've been down the road before the private prison with Stanley Prison. Private contractors came in, built the prison without really the state saying we were going to build it or buy it. The state eventually bought it and then had to go back and retrofit it because they hadn't built it to standards. So there were those problems. At the same time, in the budget, Governor Walker's proposed spending some big bucks to improve safety at these prisons. So there is an issue there. And oh, by the way, our prison population is going to increase going forward. We're going to hit a record before too long.
So 3,000.
There is a need right now to either address this somehow through the population, an investment in something to either improve these things or build new ones. But do you want to put money into prisons right now and really build something?
But you heard
new?
They asked me, if official mm-hmm. Susan, saying we're afraid this is privatization. But in the wake of the Stanley prison fiasco, there's a law that we cannot have private prisons. So mm-hmm. this would have to get around that. But just to your point, the Building Commission wants to invest $22.4 million in Green Bay. And the Building Commission wants to invest $6.9 million in safety upgrades. I read the Building Commission recommendation in Waupun. But here's my bottom line question for you. Can you see Governor Walker, who hasn't visited a prison, who hasn't issued a pardon, approving anything except the study that his budget asked for?
That's a good question. I mean, give credit to Steffen and Lucey that this is a creative option because it also opens up that land. It's valuable land in the Green Bay area for development. So give them credit for being creative. I just don't know if you get the players involved right now to get on the same page to make this happen, at least not right now. It'd be interesting to watch.
Steffen called it the most valuable land for economic development in northeast Wisconsin. Any thoughts on the back and forth between San Filippo and Goyke over getting tougher on crimes, including those at Carjack?
Oh, I mean, this is part of you're seeing Attorney General Jeff Sessions talk about getting tougher on crime. I mean, they're seeing a strain where we seem to be moving away from like lock 'em up kind of mentality, that there seems to be a strain coming back, but going back to some of that stuff.
Right. Okay, new subject. I was interested in your reporting because I thought it was excellent. The idea, Walker's proposal to end the state property tax levy that supports forests, which raises, I think, $90 million or a little bit less a mm-hmm. year, has really split the GOP. You said that in one of your newsletters this week. You want to talk about that?
So here's the thing. The forestry tax right now pays for forestry programs. It's a dedicated funding source. So what Walker wants to do is basically buy that off, pull it off the tax rolls and pay for it with state funds. So you and I would save about, if you have a medium valued home, 27 bucks, 20, roughly
yeah,
26.
You're right. 26, 27 bucks.
Off your property tax bill. To do that, you have to invest $180 million in state GPR. Here's a rub. One, the people who care about forestry worry about losing a dedicated funding source because if you put forestry services into the GPR pot, it competes with schools, Medicaid, state operations, those kinds of
prisons,
things.
Prisons, UW.
So there's that issue.
Revenue sharing.
Number two, there are members of the Senate Republican Caucus looking for ways to free up GPR to pay for borrowing for roads because they want an option beyond what's before them right now with Governor Walker's budget. Well, how do you do that? You find GPR. Here's a pot of money Governor Walker said, here's $180 million, $180.4 I think it is, that would pay off this this property tax, right. End the state property tax.
End the state property tax.
Is
I think first time since 1931.
So that's money just sitting there. You could grab that and pay for borrowing.
Right.
Three, we are getting to the heavy lifting of the budget right now.
Yeah.
The Joint Finance Committee has done 3 weeks or so of kind of like the low-hanging fruit, knocking things out one after another. At some point, this puzzle has to come together. And there are big pieces left to this puzzle. If you commit to those dollars right now, you take them off the table for making these puzzles fit, these pieces fit, if they move things around. So there's some hesitancy from some lawmakers to do this. Now, that's not means it's uniform. And John Nygren, the co-chair of finance, said, I want to do this. But I've also got 63 other members I got to work, or 64, to work with to make sure on the same page. Finally, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is the $27 that you and I would save, 26, worth the $180 million in GPR? Now, to the realtors and AFP, it is.
Ads.
And they're both doing digital ads or TV and radio.
Right.
They've also been doing postcards focusing on the 12 Republicans on the Finance Committee, plus Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald. So they're putting the pressure on, trying to ramp it up, that they want to get rid of this tax. It's going to be an interesting fight to watch. I get the impression this won't be figured out until toward the end of the process.
Well, I talked to one Republican senator on Joint Finance who says, nobody thanks me in my district for lowering the property tax. So this is not, I have a real question whether it gets adopted. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what they did on, kind of out of the blue, they called on Representative Bourne, who introduced the new a proposal on sex offender placement. Mm-hmm. You and I have been covering this issue as long as we've been covering the Capitol. And the proposal that they added to the budget, by the way, the vote was 13-3, mm-hmm. they picked up one Democrat.
Drew Shanklin.
Shanklin, who was working with Representative Bourne, and it would waive the law that requires sex offenders to live within 1,500 feet from schools, child care centers, parks, and churches. But here's the bottom line. Sex offenders would have to be placed in their county of residence, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah. So Mark Bourne, after the hearing, he talked about this is all designed to stop other counties from dumping their sex offenders on more rural areas. Because if you think about it, if you are a community, you can legislate through all these buffers of 1,500 feet from A, B, C, D, and E mm-hmm. to the point where you can't house a sex offender in your community. Well, if you can't house them there, where do you go? You go to a more rural community. So there are more opportunities there. Bourne said this is about giving flexibility to the locals that, okay, this guy is your problem. You figure out where to house him. We're not going to take him anymore in the county next door. Or like John Nygren said, I don't want to see these guys come to Marinette anymore
yep.
from other places or urban areas.
Okay, and on that note, that's a beautiful segue. Let's listen from Joint Finance. Let's listen to Joint Finance Co-Chair Nygren on just that very point, expressing frustration on this issue. He asked Representative Bourne to work with Shanklin to come up with this compromise. Let's hear from Co-Chair Nygren.
Nobody's calling it sex offender residency or placement because nobody wants to talk about it. But that's what it is, okay? It's a tough issue. We don't even call it what it is. So this motion is bringing the voice closer to the people that are affected by a sex offender placement. I think it's very appropriate. I think it's very measured. And while it may not be perfect, it is a significant improvement. And I can tell you my constituents that are being right now inundated with residency placements from Milwaukee County and Outagamie County and pretty much any other county except for Marinette County, believe this is good policy that makes good fiscal sense.
Just a little bit more on the sex offender mm-hmm. placement that Joint Finance added to the budget. It was opposed by the other Democrats, Hintz, Taylor, Erpenbach. Shanklin went over, but we haven't said it yet, and it's important to note that judges would still continue to
yes.
oversee the placement.
Yes.
So do you smell that this provision stays in the budget?
The finance co-chairs are behind it, so you'd think so.
Okay. New subject, another audit. It says, the first summary from the Audit Bureau says, WEDIC has made progress, but the agency cannot be certain about the numbers of jobs created or retained as a result of its awards. The potential totals of uncollectibles grew 90 or more days overdue grew from 1.3 million, pretty small, to 11 million in 2 years. WEDIC Secretary and CEO Hogan said the audit would, quote, play a key role in continuing to make WEDIC a stronger organization. Now, why is this so relevant to the budget deliberations?
Because they just, last week I think it was, reopened the door to WEDC doing loans again. Now, they couldn't be forgivable loans. This is where we're encountering some problems. A forgivable loan basically says, Steve, if you hit A, B, and C, you don't have to pay the money back. It's basically a grant. So they're not going to do those, but they'll open the door back to doing a loan program. These issues that WEDC's been having go back to its formation. It really had a poor foundation when the governor decided to go from the Department of Commerce to WEDC in basically a six-month period. It was rushed.
2011.
You know, some of these problems actually predate WEDC. They go back to the Commerce Department, let's be honest.
Yep.
But the bottom line is that this agency has been struggling to get its head above water ever since it was created. The co-chairs of finance last week said, hey, we have more confidence in the administration over there now. They're ready for this. Hogan saying, we're making progress, and the audit says they're making progress. There are also things like the forgivable the loans, the outstanding debt, up to $11 million, $4.5 million to two lender or
Kestel, the aircraft manufacturer in Superior.
So there's a big chunk of it. Yeah. Another couple million or $3 million to basically forgivable loans. So it takes it into perspective a little bit, but they still have problems going back to formation. They're trying to get things figured out. Now, the Democratic members of the Finance Committee wanted to reopen this area of the budget this week to go back in and address some of the stuff.
Yep.
Co-chair said no.
Said no.
We're good to go right now. But they're making progress, but it's been, you know, a poor start for them that's put them behind the eight ball the entire time.
Let's go back and summarize some of the stuff that Joint Finance also did. We talked about the sex offender placement rule. There was a question raised whether that's policy. Yes, it's policy, but so what? But they also yesterday, the governor recommended a freeze on tuition for the technical colleges. You surprised? Joint Finance says, we ain't buying that?
Well, they're saying basically that, one, I think one of the members said there's a value in paying for education, you know. So they're saying $10 million, $5 million I think was going to go in. Here, $5 million be freed up, so they're freeing up GPR for other things down the road. Their idea is this is a good deal as it is. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing too badly paying for tuition at the technical college system. The Dem members pushed the idea of free technical college.
Yeah, that would have cost $272 million a year, $270.
And John Nygren's message was Bernie Sanders lost. This is not going to work, essentially.
Right.
So obviously, Mr. Sanders pushed the idea of a free college education. This is a little bit different, but same vein. And then Republicans are saying this is a good deal as it is.
How do you read the Joint Finance vote saying no to the governor's recommended on tuition for the tech colleges? What are the implications next week when they deal with the governor's proposed 5% cut in tuition for the 2018-2019 for the UW system?
Few people I talk to think that's going to survive. They look at it as there are $35 million the second year of the budget that would pay for that, backfill that tuition cut, essentially.
Yeah, 35.
That UW system has already been the best deals, and Madison, I think it's in the bottom third of the Big Ten for tuition. It's already a good deal. Maybe what they do, and this is a big maybe from people talking to people, they take that $35 million, take a chunk of it over to financial aid, but grab a big chunk to pay for the raises for UW employees that were supposed to be paid for by the self-insurance program that they're now going to nix.
Right.
There are ways to free up money to pay for other stuff. This is what finance does sometimes.
Let's talk about what they did on the State Elections Commission, because the Elections Commission was losing 22 federal money that pays for 22 of their FTEs. The governor recommended bringing back 16. Do I have that right? And Joint Finance said, let's add five more. So the net
21
is,
of 22, yeah.
Yes, the net is Elections Commission would only lose one FTE. Now, this is another example of where they said, thanks very much, Governor, but we think we have... But they talked about the need for the Elections Commission, which has dealt with all these recalls and, you know, the recounts and everything else. So was this an endorsement for the Elections Commission, or they don't want to be embarrassed?
One interesting thing, you rarely heard a Republican lawmaker publicly praise the old Government Accountability Board.
Yeah.
During that hearing this week, I think it was Alberta Darling, the co-chair from the Senate side, said they did a good job with the election last fall and the ensuing recount. So you got to take that if you're a member of the Elections Commission, like, okay, we're doing okay. So Mike Haas came from the GAB to take that position as one of the administrators. That's kind of an endorsement of what you're doing if you get praise from a Republican in public in the Finance Committee.
Also, the governor recommended, well, first of all, the VW settlement The emission scandal. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin's going to get $42 million. The governor recommended using 26 of that to pay for Milwaukee County buses. Joint Finance says, let's set up a pool for bus systems statewide, which means Milwaukee County may or may not get its $26 million in new buses.
Yeah, so it's going to be $26 million for Milwaukee County buses. Now, the catch is Milwaukee County would have had its shared revenue payment reduced by $1.95 million over a period, kind of payback, essentially
pay
a big chunk of
money.
It. $16 million replaced cars and vehicles in the state fleet. What they said was, no, we're going to do $32 million for an overall statewide pool that you can apply for, and then $10 million for the state fleet to replace vehicles. So, they're reworking a lot of Walker's stuff to put their own stamp on the budget. Now, even with their version, if you, let's say you're Steve Walters' municipality, you apply for the money for your buses and you get it, you still get your aid reduced by taking that money. So it's a similar setup, but more people are eligible for the money than just Milwaukee County.
Yeah, that was interesting. But we don't know yet whether Milwaukee get more or less of that $26 million deal that they cut with the governor. Okay, you know we had to go there. Sheriff Clark going to Homeland Security as an assistant secretary.
Well, according to him, that's the catch of this, right?
That's true. They haven't officially confirmed that.
Yeah.
Well, he'd better be. He better have a job in June. You know, but so controversial. But he had a very interesting career. From 1978 to 2002, rose from Milwaukee police officer to commander of the police department's intelligence division. Scott McCallum then appointed him. Elected 2002, 6, 10, and 14. But then in 2014, he emerged as a spokesman for conservatives, mm-hmm. and then he really did that professionally last year.
Gone a lot. I mean, if you look at the last year for Sheriff Clark, he's been frequently absent from the job. They had 4 deaths in 6 months at the jail. I mean, he has become a lightning rod both for criticism and also, you know, he's created some of his own problems with his Twitter feed and his comments about things. What was interesting to me is that, you know, we assumed after President Trump was elected in November that Sheriff Clark would end up there somehow, you know, some way, because he'd been a loyal soldier in the Trump machine. I was like, well, why is it taking so long? Well, the Trump administration took a while to fill a bunch of jobs. So at one time, he was actually mentioned, Sheriff Clark, as a possible secretary, cabinet-level position, but that required Senate confirmation. This job that he's aligned for, according to him at least, it does not require Senate confirmation. Why that is important is he has got a lot of baggage. If you had Sheriff Clark before a Senate committee, they would air out all that baggage and cause him all kinds of problems. I'm not sure that's what President Trump needs right now. But with this job, he goes over there, assuming it's all in the up and up, and he's telling us the truth. He goes to that job, he does his thing, and, you know, there's no, like, big public controversy hearing.
You know what I find intriguing? He said in his interviews with Vicki McKenna on WISN that he will be a liaison to state and local governments. Hmm. Hi, this is Assistant Secretary Clark, Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago. Can I come talk to you? Oh, kind of forget what I've been saying about Governor Hickenlooper of Denver. This is Assistant Secretary Clark. Can we talk?
I'm not sure it'll be an open reception between County Executive Chris Abley and Mayor Tom Barrett, but Sheriff Clark.
Boy, that appointment, Abley, strong, mm-hmm. America doesn't need this. Lena Taylor said, anyway, you've seen that. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's talk about going forward. The governor gets to pick the next sheriff for at least 11 months, 10 months.
So the election would be November of 2018. Well, what's interesting for Walker is this. One, you basically can't win countywide if you're a Republican, except for Scott Walker. He pulled it off a few times, so that's a rarity. But Sheriff Clark ran as a Democrat, even though he's an unabashed conservative, because you need that D behind your name most of the time in a very Democratic county. How does Walker find an appointee who is satisfactory to his base, the conservative base, that this is a good, solid Republican-type conservative, who could make it as an independent or a Democrat or whatever, run for re-election? That's a big thing. Or does Walker take a placeholder? Somebody's going to say, I'll take the job until, you know, through the election next year, I'm done in January, whatever, of 19, the new person takes over, good to go.
Yeah.
Does that happen? That's one thing to watch. How does Walker walk this line of who to appoint to replace Clark, who was appointed by a Republican but ran as a Democrat, and did that in part because of necessity.
And I think I want to correct myself. The election for the next Milwaukee County Sheriff is not spring of 18, but it's November of 18.
Yes.
Okay, I want to correct that. You had a pretty interesting straw poll, Wiz Politics did, at the Republican Convention we were both at. You want to talk about those results?
Sure. So Leah Vukmir was kind of the runaway favorite. Now, these straw polls, this is the base of the base of the base, right? I mean, these are people who give up a weekend to go in a convention hall, listen to speeches all day long. So these are the party, like, faithful. That said, Leah Vukmir won about almost half of the vote, 47%.
Right.
We had the people who were there as delegates, alternates, or as her guests, we had about 300 votes, and she was a clear winner. Now, I've asked people, like, why would that be the case? And I've got a couple of reasons. One, Leah Vukmir has a record with conservatives. I mean, she's fought the good fights. They know her. They're familiar with her. She's done, you know, going off to do these, the Lincoln Day dinners, being at Republican events. They know her. When you have people in the private sector running for office sometimes, for both parties, if the bases know who they are, there's a certain, like, you got to check some box. But you have to prove yourself to us first. For Nicole Schneider, Kevin Nicholson, they've got to prove themselves. Well, Leah already has. So that helped. Plus, she was there. You know, she's working the crowd. So
she was.
You had it all up. That's good for Leah Vukmir. Now, the next thing for Leah is this. Can she raise the money? Now, Leah has been very aggressive in going out and doing events, talking about running for Senate, but she's wrapped up in finance right now. That ends up maybe end of June. Can she then go out and raise the money needed to compete with a Nicole Schneider who has personal money, an Eric Hovde who has personal money, Kevin Nicholson, who's got Illinois businessman Dick Neuline, who's pumped $2 million already into a super PAC. Can she raise that money? Because here's one thing people will tell you. State elected officials sometimes, they run for federal office, they're used to getting money from people who are interested in state government, right? They've got an interest in having those people's ears. That money sometimes dries up when you go to run for federal office because you're not really in their realm anymore. Where is she going to raise the money? How is it going to go? There's some challenges.
It was interesting. And when Chairman Courtney gaveled the adjournment to that convention, I went out to try to find somebody. And Leah was there explaining who she is. You know, I'm a geriatric nurse. So she did work it pretty hard.
Yeah.
And her people had that sign, I love Leah.
So good for Leah.
Yeah. Okay. Stock picks.
So rising Mark Green, former ambassador, former congressman, ran for governor in 06. The Trump administration is appointing him to head this federal agency, which it kind of wants to get rid of.
AID?
Yes.
Agency for International?
Yes. So grid for green. And the other interesting is there are several stories this weekend about how here's a guy who's a Trump appointee who has bipartisan support, which is a rarity right now. But it's also a guy being appointed to an agency that might go away. But still, good for him for now.
Okay. And next.
So Tammy Baldwin, there's a super PAC out of Illinois that is running about $500,000 in TV and against her right now. What's interesting about this is, one, we are in May of 2017. It's an off year. Election's a year and a half away. Why would you run an ad right now? Well, there are a couple reasons why. Sometimes groups will do a poll, figure out what numbers are for somebody, run an ad, see how that message resonates, and then poll afterward and see, okay, did it move the needle? Two, this ad's about the Tomah VA. This is a preview of what she's going to see coming, you know, next year. I'm sure there's going to be up a lot. They're trying to figure out where do you kind of really push the buttons with that issue. But for Baldwin, same time that this is being spent, it's a ways away from the election. Can they do this every month for the next 16? Probably not.
That's true.
Two, can they burn it in? What I've been taught in politics is if you're going to put a message out there and start running with it, you have to keep it up and keep reminding people of it to burn it in. So I'm not sure this is going to stay with people right now, but they're trying to kind of lay some foundation for stuff. And oh, by the way, right now the Trump White House is not having a good week. It reinforces the notion of a bad year in 18 for Republicans. Now, I will not make any predictions about 2018 right now at all about the environment because who knows?
Everything changes.
But if this trajectory continues, you got to think that Baldwin's in better shape than she would have been with President Clinton because President Trump right now is having a hard time getting his numbers are like 39%, 38. We're in danger territory for him. They're talking about all these controversies. I mean, this is not the best environment right now for Republicans to be in a run for an office. And so it helps Baldwin.
Falling.
So Brad Schimmel, this guy cannot get ahead of this rape test kit issue. They had a hearing this week with a committee about it. Somebody asked him, well, is it true they only tested 60? And he said he was confused by the answer, didn't know where they got that number from. It came from his office. The spokesman later said, well, actually, number 63, that's why he's confused. This is an issue for Brad Schimmel that he has to get ahead of. I've talked to you about this. They have said if he can't get his arms wrapped around this issue and get it figured out, he will have this in TV ads. He already will next fall over and over again. And you're going to see a juxtaposition of here's a guy who can't get these rape kits tested but can spend money on challenge coins and swag.
Yes.
It's a pretty decent message right now. Now, there are reasons why there is a backlog. It is not all because of Brad Schimmel. It's been building for years. But they have to find a better message to get ahead of this one, or it's going to continue to plague them. And this is not
that number 60 kits is pretty damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 19th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.